Welcome to Making Footprints, Not Blueprints, a regular podcast about matters philosophical and religious. My name is Andrew James Brown, and despite being myself an atheistically inclined freethinker, I'm also the minister to the Unitarian Church in the city of Cambridge, UK. The title of this podcast is borrowed from the philosopher Herbert Fingeret, who, in his book, The Self in Transformation, offered us studies that were outcomes rather than realised objectives, which were offered to the reader as an encouragement to make intellectual footprints, not blueprints. This podcast tries to proceed in a similar fashion and take seriously an insight of the poet A.R. Ammons, who felt that true human freedom only comes when we have understood that full scope always eludes our grasp, that there is no finality of vision, that we have perceived nothing completely, and that, therefore, and thankfully, tomorrow a new walk is a new walk. Welcome to this week's New Walk. Athens or Jerusalem, or Athens and Jerusalem. Existentialism and liberal religion. In three recent editions of this podcast, I've spoken in various ways about why I think it is important to reassess and reconnect with the two key model ways of being in the world, which have decisively influenced not only European and North American religious and secular culture in general, but also the particular liberal religious, free-thinking Unitarian tradition to which I belong. Those two models are the first century Jewish rabbi, Jesus, or Yeshua, and the ancient Greek philosopher, Socrates. Although in the end I find I'm not in agreement with Soren Kierkegaard's own philosophical conclusions about faith and belief, I remain completely supportive of his general Socratic project of revising the definition of what it means to be a person who takes the example of Jesus with the utmost seriousness. I think this task is important because, thanks to the many, many conversations I've had in Cambridge during my 20 years of ministry, it seems to me that in our own deracinated, highly secular, neoliberal and now COVID-19 blighted age, there are very large numbers of people of genuinely liberal, secular and naturalistic persuasion who remain hopeful that there must exist a reasonable way deeply to reconnect with their own cultures sustaining ancient religious and philosophical traditions, but without, at the same time, either being forced to accept traditional religion's many irrational superstitions, dogmas and prejudices, on the one hand, or the self-centred nihilism offered by certain forms of atheism, on the other. Today I'd like to continue to do this Socratic revision of what it means to follow the human Jesus via a brief examination of a central insight found in the work of an important Unitarian minister and philosophically inclined theologian, John F. Haywood. He was born in 1918 and died in 2012. Before proceeding, I want to be clear that in emphasising Jesus and Socrates, I am not saying that there are no other religious and philosophical figures or traditions to whom and to which one should be paying serious attention. That would be plainly ludicrous and wrong. However, along with Haywood, I am saying that together, Jerusalem and Athens, represented by Jesus and Socrates, are the philosophical and religious fountainheads of European and North American culture. Without drinking deeply of their sustaining, intermingled waters, it is impossible for us either properly to understand, critically discriminate and savour appropriately the flavour of our own complex culture, or, on the other hand, properly to begin to understand, critically discriminate and savour appropriately the flavour of any other complex culture's fountainheads. With this important caveat made, let me return to John F. Haywood. During the 1930s, whilst he was studying philosophy at the University of Chicago, Meadville, Lombard, Heywood was taught by the important liberal Christian and Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams. Adams was born in 1901 and died in 1994. Adams emphasised that all parts of culture interfaced with and must come under the lens of religion, including and especially political life. This was a lesson Adams had learnt firsthand in Germany during the early 1930s. It was Adams's teaching which helped encourage and foster in Heywood what was to become an abiding and deep interest in the religious traditions of both Judaism and Christianity, and also Greece. In connection with this, he increasingly came to feel that mythology provided humankind with the underlying structures which enabled the continuity of history required for the establishment of any successful civilization and culture. This conjunction of Jewish, Christian and Greek mythology remained central to Heywood, and throughout his long and fruitful life, he continued to stress that, for early modern and modern European and North American culture, it had never been a case of either Athens or Jerusalem, Socrates or Jesus, but always Athens and Jerusalem, Socrates and Jesus. Now, in order to make proper sense of the importance of this insight for us today, it's necessary to give you just a little bit of Heywood's biography. Heywood received his Bachelor of Divinity in 1943, by which time the US had entered into the Second World War. Consequently, instead of entering parish ministry, as he had originally planned, he enlisted as a Navy chaplain and saw combat during the invasion of Iwo Jima. At the end of the war, in 1945, Heywood left the Navy and returned to the University of Chicago Divinity School to research a PhD in theology, eventually writing his dissertation on myth and art, using Tillich and Whitehead as primary sources for a piece called The Theology and Philosophy of Mythical Symbolism. Although on graduating in 1949, he accepted a call to become the minister of the First Unitarian Church of Columbus, Ohio. Very shortly afterwards, in 1951, he took what was for him the difficult decision to return to the University of Chicago Divinity School as assistant professor of religion and art. It's important to understand that by the 1950s, especially after the horrors of the Nazi concentration camps and the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, belief in a supernatural God was becoming increasingly untenable for many people, especially those of liberal persuasion. And the kind of existentialist thinking expressed by Kierkegaard and Nietzsche in the 19th century, and by Heidegger, Camus, Sartre and Jaspers, amongst others, in the 20th century, was beginning to become ever more influential. Heywood's philosophical and religious studies, as well as his own direct experience of war, helped him fully to appreciate the important and creative challenge existentialism was making to earlier standard forms of optimistic liberal religion, which had consistently stressed three main beliefs. Namely, 1. That religion and philosophy was a human achievement rather than a divine gift. 2. That humankind was thought to be naturally equipped to achieve everything that was necessary for its well-being, including, of course, religion as one such achievement. 3. That the function of freedom was to release the natural goodness of humankind, which would in turn lead all free people to live in spontaneous harmony and cooperation. As I hope will be obvious, in the post-war context, down onto our own troubled age, the inevitability or truth of these liberal orthodoxies could simply no longer be taken for granted. So what instead, asked Heywood, should liberal religion in Europe and North America now be trying to say, so as still to be able to offer people both some meaningful, substantive, practical religious content, and also a sense of genuine continuity with its earlier history, something which, as I have already intimated, no civilization and culture can do without? Well, Heywood thought it was possible to reappropriate and reinterpret Jewish and Greek myths and ideas, albeit with what he called some definite alterations in the teaching itself, so as to be accessible in a living way to modern secular religious liberals and existentialists. His fullest expression of this reappropriation and reinterpretation can be found in his important 1962 book, Existentialism and Religious Liberalism, which has remained central to my own thinking for well over two decades now. Alas, the book is now long out of print, but should you be interested in reading it, in the notes to this podcast you'll find a link to a PDF copy. What follows now is no more than the barest introductory outline of Hayward's basic idea, in the hope that it may encourage you to go on to read him yourself. With regard to the Greek tradition, Hayward argues that, when reinterpreted, it continues to offer us the insight that through the careful cultivation of wisdom, we always already have genuine access to a resource which can help us to achieve a certain level of knowledge about, and acceptance of, our place within the unfolding natural world. The argument is that when we actively cultivate and act out of such wisdom, we find we are gifted with a certain kind of appropriate and modestly serene and harmonious life. Naturally, this doesn't offer us a life completely devoid of stress and disharmony, but it does offer us a way of living which is meaningful and worthwhile. Socrates and his conversational dialectical method of inquiry is our primary model here. With regard to the Jewish tradition, Hayward argues that when reinterpreted, it offers us the insight that an appropriate and modestly serene and harmonious life occurs only to the degree by which we are able and willing to give ourselves up to the ethical demand to show loving care and support to our fellow human beings. Jesus is, of course, our primary model here. And as I've said many times before, Jesus's particular genius was to suggest again and again that whatever one might mean by God, God was only to be known in situations where this loving care and support of our fellow human beings was being shown. Again, this is not to live a life completely devoid of stress and disharmony, but it is to live in a way which shows how we can work through these things in a meaningful and worthwhile fashion. Hayward gently insists, as do I, that there is no absolute cleavage between these two ways of proceeding. True, Athens is not Jerusalem and Jerusalem is not Athens, Jesus is not Socrates and Socrates is not Jesus. But between them, there has for us always already been occurring a constant and mutually informing and sustaining flow and exchange of ideas, methods and ideals. The difference between them, such as it exists, is really only one of emphasis, with Socrates and the Greek tradition tending to stress and foreground the possibility of humanity's individual salvation through wisdom, and with Jesus and the Jewish tradition tending to stress and foreground the obligation of humanity's social salvation through acts of justice and love. At this point, it is useful to introduce the naturalistic, even atheistic definition of God proposed by the important philosopher John Dewey that Hayward continually implies is at work in his writing, even though he never directly cites it. We need to bring this definition into play because for old-school liberal religion, all the foregoing utterly depended on belief in the existence of an all-good, all-powerful, all-knowing God, who would assuredly and eventually bring about both our individual and social salvation. What then, if anything, can stand in the place of the theistic God as underpinning our, by now secular and often atheistical, hopes for salvation? Salvation in this world, of course. Dewey's working answer is found in his influential short book of 1934 called A Common Faith. It runs as follows. Quote, "We are in the presence neither of ideals completely embodied in existence, nor yet of ideals that are merely rootless ideals, fantasies or utopias. for there are forces in nature and society that generate and support the ideals. They are further unified by the action that gives them coherence and solidarity. It is this active relation between ideal and actual to which I would give the name God. I would not insist that the name must be given. Unquote. Dewey's words help us to see that, even without belief in the existence of the supernatural theistic God of Judaism, or the rather more naturalistic gods of the Greeks, by following the examples and methods of Jesus and Socrates, we really do still come into the presence of ideals that are not merely rootless ideals, fantasies, or utopias, but ideals which can be made to work hand in hand with the real existent forces that we find at play in nature and society. This contact between ideals and natural and societal forces offers us real, if always limited, possibilities to generate and support those same ideals, which can, in turn, be further unified by all those actions in which, like Jesus and Socrates, we display wisdom, justice, and love. If we are able to persist together in this dutiful endeavour over the course of time, then our ideals truly have a genuine chance of gaining further coherence and solidarity. Although today most of us no longer believe, as did our liberal forebears, that the New Jerusalem or New Athens is, thanks to God, going to be the inevitable outcome of our endeavours, we can, with a completely clean heart, still believe fully in the reality of the active, naturalistic relationships that exist between the ideal and the actual, and which Dewey thought could be called God. We can believe this even though, like Dewey, I, and perhaps you, will no longer insist that the name God must be given to that active relationship. So to conclude, I have long felt that Hayward's groundbreaking work offers any modern, liberal, sceptical but still religiously inclined seeker just such a reasonable way to reconnect with their European and North American cultures, religious and philosophical traditions. Despite a loss of belief in the reality of an interventionist, supernatural, theistic God, Hayward shows that it remains perfectly possible and reasonable for secular liberals to continue to have the greatest confidence in promoting the wise, loving, and just ways of living taught to us by Jesus and Socrates. And that brings us to the end of this edition of the Making Footprints, Not Blueprints podcast. So, farewell for now, and remember, tomorrow a new walk is a new walk. See you on the path.
Thank you again for listening to the Making Footprints, Not Blueprints podcast. If you haven't yet, please subscribe and each new podcast will arrive on your device as soon as it is released. Also, if you'd like to continue in the conversation, please come along to our live online discussions, which take place every other Wednesday evening at 7:30 p.m. GMT. Anyone is invited to ask questions or make comments on the issues discussed in the podcast. You can find the link to join the Zoom meeting in the episode notes. We look forward to talking with you then.